Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered here today to... Has anyone seen the bride and groom?
Sorry, sorry, we're here. We were getting lucky in the limo and we lost track of time.
No, Lucky Land Casino, with cash prizes that add up quicker than a guest registry.
In that case, I pronounce you lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Daily bonuses are waiting. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details. With Lucky Land Slots, you can get lucky just about anywhere.
This is your captain speaking. We've got clear runway and the weather's fine, but we're just going to circle up here a while and get lucky. No, no, nothing like that. It's just these cash prizes add up quick. So I suggest you sit back, keep your tray table upright, and start getting lucky.
Play for free at LuckyLandSlots.com. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Hello, it is Ryan, and we could all use an extra bright spot in our day, couldn't we? Just to make up for things like sitting in traffic, doing the dishes, counting your steps, you know, all the mundane stuff. That is why I'm such a big fan of Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has all your favorite social casino style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. That should brighten your day a little. Actually, a lot. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com. That's ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving. At your desk. Maybe at the gym. But you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach. And see a rocket launch. Or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Hi, everybody, and welcome back to the Bronze Medal Winning Show, Cricket Daily. I'm Andrew Mensel. I'm with Paul Dennett. Hi, Paul. How are you feeling after our bronze medal win?
Oh, it was a great night, Menners. G'day, everyone. Yeah, it was really exciting, and it was fun to be back in sort of a crowd of people for the first time in a long time. It was a great night, the night of the awards, and winning bronze. It would have been nice to win gold. I had a joke lined up for what I was going to say, which I'd rehearsed with my wife, and she said it wasn't funny. So I don't know how that would have gone down, but winning bronze is better than nothing, and it was very exciting.
And joining us again is Robin Chipperfield, cricket broadcaster and moonlighting as a Nottingham Forest YouTuber. So if you love your Forest footy team, Chippers is your man. Chippers, how are you?
Yeah, I'm good, Manners. How are you? It should say Manners and Denners at the top there, shouldn't it? I feel like there's an opportunity miss. I think that would have elevated you from bronze to at least silver had you done that. But just maybe one to bear in mind for the future.
Yeah, so for those tuning in on the podcast app or watching on YouTube, Cricket Daily's back for the Ashes. We'll be doing shows after every day of the test matches, and we'll be covering the whole series. And, yeah, as I said, we won bronze medal at the Australian Podcast Awards in the sports category. So it was, I just want to thank all the listeners who've supported the show since we started. And I want to thank all the contributors to the show. I've had a number of fine panelists and they've all made immense contributions. So I just want to thank everyone that's put in time. It was very rewarding to get a bronze medal for the show. I got two bronze medals at the awards. So if you like true crime, I produce a show called Fairground Fuck-Ups. It's about accidents at amusement parks, and that was bronze in the true crime category. So I was just coming out of the awards like covered in medals and glory, and also with a COVID scare. So I got Omicron as well. So it was a really good night.
See, I think again, had you not used a swear word in your podcast, you might have got elevated again to silver. So maybe that's another tip to bear in mind for the future.
Menners for once, his own internet. Wait a minute, let's get this on record. Robin, you're still there.
I dropped out.
Yes.
Menners has dropped down. So Jaleesa, if you're watching, we should definitely take a little... Yes, oh, the mighty Menners, he of the technology, he of the king. Oh, how the mighty have
fallen. I'm back, though.
true. It was a pretty small dropout. I was hoping you'd never come back, but that's okay.
You're not the only one. Well, we have a lot to get through. We're here to preview the Ashes. So much to talk about. I guess let's start with the big news of the day. Chippers, what's your reaction? Jimmy Anderson ruled out of the first test.
Yeah, my first reaction was, oh, that is really not good news. That is not how England wanted to start the Ashes. The more I thought about it, the more I think it actually goes back a couple of days. And this, you know, this is me. This is my interpretation of it. This is no way gospel. This is just how I'm looking at it. I think the moment they canned Perth, England changed their decision. Because there was no way, in my mind, there was no way Jimmy Anderson was going to play Perth. If you're going to leave him out of any test match, it's Perth.
Yep.
So I think they've worked their way back from there. I think they've probably looked at the weather forecast for Brisbane as well and thought, it's not great. Now, where do we want Jimmy Anderson to play? Well, we definitely want him to play in Adelaide in the second test. And there's, you know, we don't know where that fifth test is going to be played. If it's Hobart, I think Anderson would play Hobart. If it's the MCG day-nighter, I think he'd play an MCG day-nighter. So I think they probably thought Anderson's going to, you know, assuming he stays fit, Anderson will play three test matches this series. I think suddenly things have changed a bit. And Brisbane went from third in the pecking order, if you like, of Anderson tests to fourth. And they've said, OK, he's only going to play three, in which case he's going to play Adelaide. He's going to play Hobart / MCG and probably Sydney.
I think it's a pretty good point. And I hadn't thought of that. But when I heard it, I thought, and they did say it was just sort of managing him for Adelaide, that he had that slight calf twinge. I thought it's not such a big blow either that, you know, the most successful series that England has had in recent times, that 2010-11 series, part of that success was built on getting out of the Gabba without disaster. They got out of there with the draw. If you go with Anderson and day one happens to be a batting day, which it may not be, and if Australia pile up 3 for 350 at the end of day one and Anderson's taken none for 90, it's a long, hot summer ahead of him. It's almost keep him in reserve. If that happens to Wokes, well, kind of in some respects, some people probably expecting that anyway, and Anderson can come in as the white knight in the second test match. So I don't think it's actually as big a blow to England as has been reported.
Yeah, good point. I agree that they'd probably want to hold him back for a fifth day-night test, which I'm filthy about. If we lose the Ashes because we play a day-night test to finish the series, I mean, you know, Chippers moved all the way from England to Australia to watch England get smashed in the same time zone. So we cannot let them win.
Manners, you've got to be
more
noble.
I think it's fascinating. Do you think, where would you play that test? You know,
Melbourne.
I'm open-minded. Yeah. Oh, you play
Melbourne,
okay.
Day-night. I think the notion of it going to, the more I've thought about it, the notion of it going to Hobart is ridiculous. Cricket Australia has a charter to spread the game to the people. So go to Melbourne, which has about 30 times the population of Hobart. Don't
go to Canberra then.
It's got no one. No one lives in Canberra. It's got 400,000. Melbourne.
See, the more I think about it, you know, we've had this argument before about, you know, test matches. I've always admired the Australian way that test matches in the summer here start Brisbane, Melbourne, obviously over Christmas, Sydney in the new year. You know the order. Everybody knows where they are. I've always admired that. And when the ECB messed around with it and the first Ashes test was in Glamorgan, I thought it was an absolute disgrace. I mean, England have never quite had that order as prescriptive as Australia have. But when they moved it to Glamorgan, I was like, you know, as it turned out, it was a brilliant, you know, it's a brilliant test match.
Anyone need any fresh gloves? Need some fresh gloves?
The Bilal Shafayat Trophy, as it was called. But, you know, you knew where you were. But I, you know, it would only be like playing in Glamorgan, wouldn't it, in Cardiff for Hobart and Canberra. And there are obviously, in this case, there are good reasons for it not being in Perth, whether you agree with them or not. There are fundamentally good reasons for it not being in Perth.
Yeah, it can't be in Perth. And so the fact that I've got nothing against Hobart and Canberra hosting test matches. I just think that if it happens to be, let's say it's a decider and you've got the choice of 10,000 turning up to Canberra or 10,000 turning up to Hobart on day one, or potentially 75,000 people turning up to a day-nighter at the MCG, the Ashes is so important. You want to give it every chance to succeed and to flourish. And that would be a wonderful spectacle. And if the test match was on a, you know, if the series was on a knife edge, it could get great crowds throughout. And it would be so much better.
But what if Australia are 3-1 down? I don't think that'll happen. But if Australia are 3-1 down going to the final test, you'll get 10,000 at the MCG. Why not have 10,000 at Hobart and Canberra?
Because you'll still get more than 10,000 at the MCG. They are, I mean, as much as I don't like to admit it to them, Victorians, that Melbourne is the sporting capital of Australia, and they will get behind, or get around, as they say in their little vernacular, they will get around the MCG because it is the first ever day-night test match. If it was the case that it was 3-1 England leading going into the final test, they'd still get 50,000 for the first day of a day-nighter. They'd drop down to 40 and 30,000. But they wouldn't get 10,000 to Hobart if it was 3-1. Okay. They'd probably only get 6,000. So I just think that there's, with all due respect to Hobart, and I do think they do deserve test cricket, just not this one.
I guess, Paul, the counter, I mean, you said that, Cricket Australia's charter is to spread the game. And let me be very clear, I'm not necessarily in favour of taking it to Hobart or Canberra. But if those governments will make up the financial difference, why wouldn't it go to Hobart then or Canberra? I mean, it would spread the game, you know, in the country, despite the fact that there's more people in Melbourne.
Well, because I use that argument tongue-in-cheek, because everyone's saying, oh, its charter is to spread the game, so let's take it to Hobart. But, you know, the simple population metrics, yes, I know you're taking it to a new population centre, but I don't know what the population of Hobart is off the top of my head, but I think it's about... it would be struggling to be 200,000. Melbourne is knocking on the door of 5 million. That's a huge, massive difference. But even more so than that, spread the game to Hobart. You know, the Afghanistan test match that was meant to be there, that was appropriate and that would have been good.
The one thing I would add in is that, you know, we can sit here and debate it, but probably the people that make the decision will be the TV companies, or certainly have a major influence in where they want it to be.
That's obviously the push for the day night, because they were going to get the Perth test at night and they want
absolutely
to replace it.
And that's a good
because
thing.
Because of time zones.
People sort of say that the TV companies are kind of motivated by sort of mercenary reasons, but ultimately their motivation is in line with what my motivation is. I want
big audience,
more people watching it. Yeah. I mean, if it's going to have a massive atmosphere, and they're saying they'll build it up, and the MCG, which hosted the first test, now having its first day-night test, and they'll have soft music, and Warney will do a piece, and there'll be 80,000 in come nighttime, the viewing figures across the country will be vastly more than they will be for Hobart. And when it gets beamed all around the world, it's the decider. You want it at a great stadium, and Belrive is a lovely boutique stadium, but I just think even if Cricket Tasmania make up the difference, which just seems like a waste of money to me, that shouldn't be enough, that you want it in the showpiece event. And Menes' consideration that we've got to just have it where we want so that we win the game, I just think that's a lesser consideration. We're not, but we're bigger than that.
Well, I'm just concerned that we're handing England a massive advantage, and I'm surprised that no one else is saying it. I mean, we saw Jimmy Anderson in the Adelaide Test last tour, made the ball talk. Now, why are we giving England now an extra game with the pink ball where they might prosper in swinging conditions? And if it goes to the fifth test and the series is very tight, that could be the difference, is Australia batting under lights against an informed Jimmy Anderson or Stuart Broad.
Yeah, Anderson, from my memory of that spell in Adelaide, he had wonderful conditions and he bowled far too many balls that beat the bat and that were short outside off stump. His final figures were good, but I think that in those same conditions, Stark might have taken a few more wickets. I think Australia's bowling attack is every bit as dangerous under the lights as England's bowling attack.
What do you think, Chip? Are you happy with an extra day-night test as an English fan?
Oh, I think England have more chance of winning a day-night test than any other.
Thank you. Thank God for Chippers.
because I think if you get a more traditional, if you got a Perth wicket, but I'm thinking perhaps of the Wacker rather than anything, or a traditional Adelaide wicket, I think England are in trouble, because Australia are better at scoring big runs. You know, you go to England, you score 300 first innings, you're at least in the game and you're probably 60-40 on top of the game. Here, that's it's a different game, really. You've got to get 500 to, for me, 450, 500 is the equivalent of 300 in England. So that's, to me, that takes out one of those situations. If you play Adelaide as a day-nighter, that takes out, for me, Adelaide as being a flat track where England might struggle to take wickets because they don't have that much genuine pace and they don't have match-winning spinners. Australia do, certainly with Lyon and people like that. They have something different. But I think Adelaide is negated as a test match venue from an advantage Australia point of view. And I think if you did it with Melbourne, I don't think anybody in England would complain.
Mm. But I think that certainly leaving Perth is a big disadvantage. But that's happened. Australia can't
do absolutely
about that. If you then compare Melbourne day night versus Belgrave during the day, maybe marginally it favours England Melbourne day night. But I think they'd be quite happy with Belgrave as well. You probably get quite English conditions down there.
What about Melbourne during the day? It doesn't have to be a day-night test there, or Sydney during the day. I mean, we used to play, we played, you know, almost all test matches in history have been played up until this point during the day. I don't know why all of a sudden for this Ashes series they want to squeeze in a second one. Anyway, I'm just, it's going to be, it's
going to be, isn't it? That I mean, that's because Perth in the West Coast would have been good for East Coast TV audiences in the evening. So they want to replicate that.
Yeah, but the ratings will be no good next summer if we've just lost the Ashes. So they should think more about the future. What? Yeah, you'll be watching.
I'll be watching.
Well, I thought for this preview, we could just quickly go through each lineup. And let's start with the English lineup. So Burns and Hamid set to open. I guess you can start off, Chippers. What do you think about that opening combination? Obviously, England have struggled to find openers over the last few years.
It's as good as we can get, I think, at the moment. You know, they've tried all sorts of people over the last couple of 3 years, and I think that's as good as it gets. So for me, there's, you know, as long as they do what I think they're going to do with the side for the first test, what I'm saying is they haven't left anybody behind. They haven't left anybody behind that you'd go, I can't believe they've not picked him.
Where's Dom Sibley?
They have left one behind that I would have picked is Liam Livingston.
Go on.
Yeah. I don't believe it. I'd have him in there instead of Leach. He bowled, his spin in the World Cup looked just as good as any of them. Spinners never do any good in Australia. Look, someone record this audio and play it back to me at the end of the fifth test match. But if Leach, who I think is probably, you know, every bit as good a bowler as Lyon, if Leach or Lyon dominates this series, play this audio back to me because I don't think they will. I think that both of them,
I'm astonished by that. Do you think Leach is as good as Lyon?
No, I think he's better. Look at his record. He averages 26 in first class cricket. Lyon averages about 33 or 34. I'd pick Leach over Lyon. And I don't think either of them are going to average in the 30s in this test series. I think Livingston would do no worse, and he's a fantastic batting option. Obviously, I'm straying into ground that Menes finds illegal because it's someone who's not in the squad, and this annoys him, but that's what I would have. I think he would be worthwhile a spot in the side.
My only question with it, Dennis, and I think he's a terrific player, Livingston, is where does he bat? Because he can't bat in the top three, so I reckon, you know, he would be somewhere between 4 and 7, and I think England are pretty well stocked there.
No, but I'm saying if you put him in the place of Leach, then he bats somewhere in the top 8.
Right, okay.
All right, so sticking with the openers, I'm worried about Rory Burns getting caught in the gully a lot with his techniques. I think Australia should deal with Hamid and Burns pretty well. But then you've got Dawid Malan and Joe Root at 3 and 4. I think that's a good 1-2 punch. I think Malan showed enough last tour that I think he'll be dangerous.
I think he's the best. I'm glad they got to Malan in the end. They seem to have tried everything else to not pick Malan and hope that somebody else became more successful. But they got to Malan at the end, and I think he's good. I mean, he would probably bat at 5, I think, if everything else was equal. But England have got But I think from four down, England are absolutely fine. As good as most teams in the world, I would think. The problem is 1-3. So I think if numbers 1-3 and two of them have a half-decent Ashes, an average, say, 30-odd each, that's fine. The difference between Root coming in at 2-10, 2-15, and 2-75, I think is enormous.
What do you think of Root's prospects in this summer, Chippers? Do you think that he'll continue on his wonderful form from this year? Obviously now the extra bounce of the Aussie wickets is going to test him.
Yeah, the only concern I have is that shot he kind of just dinks down to third man. It just kind of glides off the bat. And in English conditions, that's okay because the ball doesn't bounce as much. I just worry that he might end up feathering one or two through to the keeper and the slips. But, you know, I think he's obviously has been in fantastic form, is in fantastic form as much as you can tell these things, given they've not played any Red Bull cricket for such a long time. So I think Root needs to have a very good Ashes if England are to do well in the Ashes.
I think he will. I think if I had to pick one player across either side, that, you know, to if every run they got, I got a dollar, I would be picking Root even above Smith and Labuschagne. I think that it is fair to say at the moment he is the best test player in the world. And his form over the last year, where he's got runs everywhere he's played in Sri Lanka and in India and in difficult conditions in England. His record in Australia is interesting because he only averages 38, which is not terrible, but it is below his best. But he scored one century and 650. So I haven't done the maths, but I think if you looked at his median score in Australia, it might be not too bad compared to where else he's played. That I think he probably just hasn't gone on with the job a few times. So I'm tipping him to right that wrong this time and have a bumper series.
He looks very determined in all the press conferences and everything. He looks focused. He looks determined. And I think he will be very difficult to bowl to. You know, he's in line to score the most runs ever in a calendar year at test level. I don't know the exact number, but he only needs 200 or 300, I think, to take the record. So he only has to have a pretty average series and he'll still be, you know, take, which is a pretty illustrious record to score the most test runs in a calendar year. So yeah, I think he's going to be very dangerous.
He's played about 48 test matches in the year, to be fair.
Still got to score the runs.
Absolutely. Absolutely. He's been good form.
And then you got Stokes in at 5, who obviously is a huge inclusion to this side. So I think we know what Stokes is going to offer. But, Paul, do you have any concerns with Stokes coming off a long break? He didn't play much in the English summer. Do you think there's a bit of extra pressure on him?
I don't have any concerns that he's had the long break. I think he'll play to his ability. He's a wonderful cricketer, a little bit mercurial, that I think he's the sort of player that you look back and I'm always surprised his figures aren't better than they are. Because, I mean, at his best, he's a batter that just is magnificent. And his bowling, he comes on, takes a wicket, especially with a bit of reverse swing when it's needed. His figures are slightly more modest than they maybe could be. But, yeah, obviously goes without saying that his inclusion gives England a much better chance.
What do you think, Chippers? Do you think he's going to be the player that's going to stand up in those really tough situations? I mean, I think that's what Paul was alluding to. His overall record's not amazing, but when England's in trouble, that's where he tends to perform.
Yeah, I think he's... I think the difference between having... Let's say England are 3-40 or something and Stokes walks to the wicket compared to if Stokes hadn't made this tour, then it's Pope or Bairstow at 5 and the other one probably at 6. Or maybe Livingstone would have been in the squad then, who knows. But I think that looks, if you're an Australian, that looks completely different. It's just there's another big game player that you've got to get through and you'll have to work hard for that wicket because he's not going to give you a wicket. You know, he's not going to flash outside off stump as we saw in that, famously in that Headingley test. So I think he makes a huge difference at 5 because he can play, you know, he can hit 70 or 40 balls if that's what the situation requires. As we saw at Headingley, don't forget his first, I can't remember the exact stats, but he had like 3 off 80 balls, something like that, I think, in that Headingley test match. So he can play that kind of innings as well. And him playing enables Leach to play as well. I think it would be very difficult for England to get Leach into the side, assuming they wanted to, if Stokes isn't playing. But because of that, they can. So I just think he's absolutely monumental from an England point of view.
And in that Headingley game, he also, off the back of, he bowled about 14 maidens straight to sort of keeping them in the game even before he went into bat. I mean, I think it's true that his inclusion allows them to pick Leach. I just think they've wasted, don't waste it on a spinner in Australian conditions unless you've got a Shane Warne. You know, they'd be better off picking another batter instead of Leach. Pick Pope.
Yeah, because, I mean, Brisbane, it's not going to... I mean, to be fair, Warne always had a decent record at Brisbane, didn't he?
It was his best ground, bounce. But I think in recent times...
We're not talking about a Warne, are we? But, you know, then you go to Adelaide, MCG, Sydney, it has a reputation as being a turning wicket, but doesn't seem to have done a lot of that for the last couple of years. They're not great spinning grounds, necessarily, particularly with the weather that Australia has had on the East Coast this summer so far.
Yeah.
And then number six for England. This is where there is some debate. They've got Ollie Pope or Johnny Bairstow. Now, I think Ollie Pope is pretty much locked in at six after his performance against India. He's spent a bit of time in Sydney. He played out at Campbelltown and played club cricket out there when he was about 18 or 19. So he's played great cricket. He knows the conditions. I think Ollie Pope's a very good player. And I actually think these conditions with the extra bounce and the ball coming onto the bat could suit him. What do you think, Dennis?
Well, Andrew, I think...
Andrew, wow.
I think they might go with... I think they're going to go with Bairstow. That's the rumours that I've heard. I'd probably go with Pope just because he's... I harp on about it, but his first class record is very, very good. Hasn't quite delivered at test match level yet, but I think that his upside is very high. And I'd say when you've got a first class record that good, having scored all those runs in English conditions, you must be able to play, pick him in the five test matches and see what he can do. Whereas Bairstow, he's a strange, very strange player to me. At his best, he looks like the best batter in the world. And yet his record is steadily getting worse. I think he's averaging closer to 30 than 40 now in test cricket. He's a difficult one. I could see him do well, and I have respect for him, but I don't think the Australians will be feeling too threatened by him.
Who would you go for, Chippers, Bairstow or Pope?
I can't decide. It's a flip of a coin for me because I've always been a massive fan of Bairstow because I think there's just something about him. He's just got something. And the other thing is, I think he's just coming back into test cricket. And I think if he played in the Ashes and had a poor Ashes, he might be done as a test cricketer. And, you know, he might know that. I mean, he's still got a great future in one day in T20 cricket, I think. But he might be finished as a test cricketer if he played, say, all five tests and then had a poor one. But having said that, Pope is, I think, the best-looking batsman England have had since Bell. And he reminds me so much of Ian Bell. He started off at six as well. He averaged about 30. You're always frustrated when he gets out because he looks the business. And then Ian Bell came out here and had a magnificent Ashes in under Andrew Strauss. So, I don't know. The other thing is, long-term, could Pope bat at three? Could Bairstow bat at three? And I think, for me, Pope could, but Bairstow couldn't. So I think you might go with Pope just on that basis because you're thinking longer term rather than just this series. But it's a flip of a coin. If they pick Bairstow ahead of Pope, I wouldn't really have a problem with it.
Whomever they pick, and also looping in number seven as well, Butler, I would say to the two of those three that do get picked to go out and play with freedom, especially Butler, that I think there's too much made of, oh, it's a test match, you've got to go out there and really grind it away. If you could hypnotise Butler to an extent the other two into thinking they're going out in a 50-over game and let them play with freedom, I think they'd have a much better series than if they go out and there's no future in them being seven off 40 balls and then getting a good one that they nick and off they go.
I remember the furore.
Not brilliant either, is it, in the test at the moment? I think he's only got a couple, 200s, memory serves me right. Mm. Two test hundreds for a player of his ability. I mean, he should be.
They should just free him up.
Seven. Yeah.
They should just say, mate, if you face more than 20 balls and come off with a strike rate of under 80, you're dropped.
I think the conditions here will suit Butler. You know, ball coming onto the bat, hard wickets apart from the day-night tests, probably. I think Butler could have a good series, extra bounce. Just on Bairstow, he had a shocker last time. I don't know if you remember the furor in the first test where it came out. He'd head-butted Cameron Bancroft leading into the Ashes, and then it sort of made front and back pages for a couple of days. And if Bairstow plays, I think he'll get the bit between the teeth. I think he was pretty pissed off about what transpired last tour here. And then
I'd forgotten I'll take your word for it.
Yeah.
I remembered it because at the time the English journalists were very angry, and I couldn't understand why about the, I think we might have even argued about this at the time, Minas, but that Smith and Bancroft in the press conference had been laughing about it, and they were saying that they were sort of disrespectful. And anyway, Smith got rid of that from the headlines by doing a press conference that just blew it out of the water a few months later. So no one's ever remembered that press conference again.
There was actually some comparison made. Someone did at the time of Sandpapergate get the pictures of Smith in that press conference laughing about Bairstow, and then juxtaposed it to him crying after the sandpaper. So it was noted. And so then we get into the attack. So assume Leach is going to play for England. Then where do you go? You know, Anderson, Chippers, who would you pick?
I wouldn't assume. For the first test, I wouldn't assume that Leach is going to play.
Mm, I agree.
All right. Well, who are your four quicks then?
Wokes, because they've kind of said he's going to play because Anderson's out. Robinson.
Yep.
Wood. Broad. Stokes.
Broad.
You could have a shortened game at the Gabba because of the weather forecast. And even if the weather forecast is wrong and it doesn't rain as much as they're predicting, it's not going to be sunny. So the pitch is going to stay okay, I think, for seamers pretty much throughout. So I wouldn't pick Leach for Brisbane.
I think there's every chance, though. I think it's 50-50. They might pick him, but they wouldn't surprise me at all if they didn't. If they did pick him, who do you think of those four bowlers would miss out? Would it be Broad? I've merged the two.
Broad
or Wood?
Brood.
Brood. Broad or Wood that would miss out?
It depends what they're going to do for the rest of the series, I think. Just trying to think. Broad would probably play in Adelaide because of day-night conditions. Probably play MCG as well.
The Wood with the extra pace might get the edge.
I think that's going to be one of the most fascinating things of the summer, that the number of times I've heard English commentators over the last few years talk about, even before the last Ashes, because he was then injured and didn't play, that you need pace in Australia and Wood has that. And I'm just not convinced that that is the case, that for every time we've had Mitchell Johnson tear them apart and Dennis Lilly and Jeff Thompson tear them apart, there's been plenty of other bowlers that didn't have raw pace that were decisive. And Wood is a very good bowler, but I think that, you know, he's just, is he accurate enough? And that's going to be the interesting thing. If he can land it on a dime on hitting the top of off stump, then I think he could have a very good series. If they've brought it into his head too much that he's got to go out there and be the enforcer, then I could see him dropping a bit short and getting punished.
But I think because you play five seamers, you could send Wood out there to have four or five overbursts, bowl as quick as you can, you know, get up Warner's nose a bit, unsettle it. They could do that because you've got the luxury of the five seamers with Stokes as well. So they might just do that. I think I'd go Broad just to see if Broad could get Warner out early again, just to continue that narrative. And it just becomes an issue. You know what Ashes series are like? It became an issue pretty early on in the last Ashes series in the UK. And if it carried, let's say Warner got to 40, but then got out off Broad, it's an issue. It becomes a talking point, and it becomes a narrative in the series.
It also becomes an issue for Harris. I think I don't think he'd be all that keen facing Broad, because he struggled.
Broad is very good against left-handers
and Head as well. So,
yeah,
and even Carey. But I think what you're saying about Wood is the conventional thought that they'd say go out there and just go for it. And I just think I'd go the other way. I'd say go out there and do what Glenn McGrath used to do, have an attacking field but bowl defensively. Just go out there, bowl within yourself, hit the top of off stump, and every now and again line up a bouncer. But if he just goes out there trying to sort of, you know, really get it up the Aussies, I just think that that's what they're used to, and that they might just start playing the horizontal bat shots to him with some glee.
I think you've got so many other bowlers that could do that. You know, Robinson is going to be, you know, the Hazelwood McGrath type of bowler who can do that. Stokes can do that if needs be.
I think Robinson is the key to the whole summer for England.
Yeah, I wouldn't disagree with that. I wouldn't disagree with that.
I think if he can deliver on what his potential shows, then England have a chance.
I think it would be ridiculously stupid not to pick Leach in the first test. I think they have to pick Leach. I know, Chip, as you've said, maybe the conditions won't favour. Australia can't play spin. Even Moeen Ali picked up cheap wickets on the last Ashes tour. You need a spinner in your kit bag. I think all our batters will be happy. Travis Head comes out, no facing no spinner, happy days. And I think the luxury is with Stokes, you got four quicks. So if they're not good enough, well, then is a fifth going to make a difference? Probably not. You may as well have a spinner that could confuse a few Aussie batsmen.
I mean, have a batter.
What?
Have an extra batter then.
Liam Livingstone.
No, I'm not saying that because he's not here. I understand that.
Have
Besto and Pope. Yeah. That's what I'm saying.
And Butler. Because,
yeah, I don't like that either. That's defensive.
No, but that's,
I don't like that.
I know that to say defensive, you're worried that Ian Chappell's listening in on this and he's going to knock you for not criticising that. But sometimes it's not defensive, it's just intelligent. And I think that, yes, if the pitch was going to turn, Australia, we can't play spin, and I agree. I just have visions of Leach coming on and bowling, and the ball will spin 1 millimetre, and he'll bowl nice and tidily, and he'll bowl 15 overs, none for 47, and it's just kind of like, blah. You might as well give those overs to Stokes or someone else and sneak an extra batter in there, or, sneak an extra quick in there.
Question is, if he doesn't play in Brisbane, does he play in Adelaide?
Maybe not.
And then does he play in Melbourne?
No, but I mean, Clive Lloyd didn't need a spinner. I know you don't have the four quicks of them, but I think you look at their spinners' records in Australia in forever, and with the exception of Warne, who's elite, and McGill and a few others who kind of averaged on that 30 mark, they're all taking their wickets into the 30s or 40s or 50s. So, even Graham Swann's record in Australia is poor, and yet he's talked about as being, a fantastic bowler over here. His overall record here wasn't that good.
But he did have that one exceptional series. That was the...
Yeah,
The rest of the time, England were poor, to be fair. They didn't have many runs to play with. But the time they had runs to play with, when Cook and Trott and Peterson scored, Swann came into his own.
True. And that's going to be one of the keys, that I look at some of the poor performances that England bowlers and batters have had out here, and it's because they've never got into the series, that Wokes has been bowling in, you know, after Australia has scored big runs, and it's very, 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 very difficult. That's why if they can do well in the opening few days of the Gabba and allow some of these players to actually get into the series, then I think we might see them perform a lot better than their records indicate. Because he's going to be another one, Wokes. I think he's a fantastic bowler. And to average 22 in England and average terribly everywhere else, that can't be reflective of how good he is. It'd be very interesting to see what he can do. And he can bat.
Yes, very, very good. Yeah, very useful at, say, 8.
Yeah, he's actually a fine cricketer. Wasn't he the Wisden Cricketer of the year before last? Augurs well for you, Chippers.
The Wisden Cricketer of the year. I think I was that 3 years ago. Like, every single cricketer of any note eventually gets one, because you can only win it once, and they give it away 5 times. Like,
yeah. No, you're not English, Dennis. You'll never win it.
Yeah, no, Brandon won it. You don't have to be English to win it. I think the fact that I've never played Test cricket is more of an impediment.
it augurs well for you, Chippers, because last time there was an El Nina at the same time as the Ashes was 2010-11.
La Nina. So, La Nina.
La Nina. What did I say? El Nina? La Nina?
Yeah. Yep. You're mixing El Nina.
I've got El Nina. And anyway, look, the weather's favouring the Bombs, so good luck. All right. Go on, Chippers.
I was just going to say...
Confident now?
No, I'm never confident. England had England rotated their bowlers quite a lot on that tour, if memory serves, with the likes of Tremlett and the Rankin play a test match as well. They mixed it up quite a lot. And I just wonder whether they're going to kind of go down a similar route this time. They very much picked horses for courses. I remember, who was it? There was somebody who was controversially left out. Might have been a Bresnan, someone like that.
I've banished it to my, yeah, memory, that whole series.
Yeah,
I'm going to watch it again this afternoon just to get me in the mood, I think.
Worst day of my life. Worst day of my life, the first day of the Boxing Day test. All right, let's move on to the Aussie team quickly. It was over by the time I literally went down for the Boxing Day test and was over by tea on the first day. It was
Jibbers was asking that rhetorically. He was asking that rhetorically. He knows what happened.
I've sat at the,
I went back to my friends
067 when Australia won it in 3 days, and that was just humiliating beyond belief.
I was at Lords in 2001 where Australia won on the fourth morning before lunch.
Just one thing,
was good day.
Sorry to jump in. So Graham Swan in Australia in 2013-14, he averaged 80, which was poor. 2010-11, he averaged 39.8 with the ball. So right. I wanted to check the things on that because everyone says he had a great series out here, but that, you know, that's not that's worse
no,
than
it's not that brilliant. How many average. Wickets though?
Yeah. He took 13 wickets. Sorry, no, I'm looking at the wrong one. He took 15 wickets at 39.8 with a strike rate of 88.
Okay. Yeah, not as good as is perceived. Maybe he took big wickets, I can't remember.
Yeah, that's
he did a very good sprinkler dance. So I think that's what improved his average. All righty, let's move on to the Aussie team. So you got they've settled on Harris Warner opening. I don't know if Harris will last this series. I'd be very surprised if he's the opener in the fifth test. Am I wrong to doubt?
No, you're right to doubt. The only thing I've got in favour of him is that his last couple of years, his record has improved. But he doesn't strike me as someone who's going to be in the side in 2 years' time. So I think it's his last chance that he needs to score big runs in this series. I wouldn't have picked him, but as I said, I have got some, I've been calmed somewhat by when I looked at his record that, okay, he has done a little bit in the last couple of years. I can see him nicking to the slips quite a lot though.
Yeah. Agree. There you go. Stephen Matlock.
Perfect, Stephen.
is the other option Khawaja and batting him at two, presumably up, but he doesn't bat there anymore for Queensland, does he?
No, but he could do it. I think he could bat wherever you wanted.
Yeah, me too. And I think Maddinson was another one that would have been good to be in consideration. Imagine that, Maddinson and Warner opening the batting. That'd get the crowd back in.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Do you know who the best batsman I've seen in Australia in Shield cricket? And I've only been here 2 years and I've not watched every game. By quite some distance.
Moses Enriquez.
No.
Who is it? Tell us.
Hanscom.
Really?
I think. As a potential test match player. Just gets runs all the time.
I think he's a great player as well.
He could play again. I think he's okay. He's one of, for me, in that group of players that I think Harris is in as well, that they're on the fringe of almost being good enough for a long test career, but not quite being good enough for a long test career. And sometimes those players then surprise and do a little bit better. It'll be interesting on that score where Head sort of sits at the end of this summer,
whether Hanscom's a much better player now than when he played test cricket. My feeling is that he is.
You could be right. I haven't looked at him that closely.
I think you'll be in line for the tours of the subcontinent next year. He's a good player of spin bowling. So I think they'll keep him in mind for those tours. All right. So Harris, we've got doubts. Chippers, do you think
Warner is going to... people who aren't in the squad again, aren't we?
No, you can talk about whoever you want. I'm just keeping things on track. do you think Warner is going to bounce back, Chippers, and hand the Poms a bit of medicine after a desperately diabolical 2019 Ashes? He was injured last summer against India. Are you afraid of Warner, or will the fifth test, will we be saying, bye, Davey, Bye.
Definitely one of those.
Okay, good.
I have no idea which. I think he's helped Warner by Archer not being here. And not, I mean, most of the Australian batters are, to be fair, but I think genuine pace may be a problem. As much as Broad got him out last time, I think that extra pace of Archer would cause him a problem. So he's not here. I don't know. And I think it's the key to the Ashes for me is Warner.
Wow. The key to the Ashes.
Well, the difference is if he... Let's forget Harris for a moment, with all due respect to him. But if it is 1 for 100 when Labuschagne and Smith come in, that's different. If absolutely, Australia are two for 20 when Smith and Labuschagne come in, England have got a chance of getting Smith and Labuschagne out quite cheaply because the ball's still new and it's moving around a bit. So for me, Warner is the absolute key to the whole thing. I mean, if Broad has him on toast again like he did last time, then England have a chance in the Ashes. I won't say they'll win it. I still can't see England winning the Ashes. But I think if they get Warner out, they will win Test matches in the Ashes.
Yeah, I think Warner's going to do well. But I agree with you. It'll be interesting. But I have an inkling that he's going to be have a bumper summer.
And what about our fantastic 3-4 punch, Labuschagne into Smith? We saw some interesting tactics from India last summer to Manus Labuschagne. They really tightened him up, attacked his front pad, you know, set a ring field on the leg side to try and sort of keep him on strike and stifle his run scoring, and had a mild effect. But, you know, this is the first time Labuschagne's played England since his breakout Ashes. You know, he could go bonkers, or it could be that series where, you know, the bowlers sort of work him out a bit and bring him back to the field. I guess if you're taking a stab, Chippers, which way do you think it'll go for Manus?
I think you'll get runs. I think you'll get plenty of runs.
I set it up, but it's...
I think he's not had a brilliant summer so far in Shield cricket, so we don't really know what kind of form he is in.
But he scored 100 terrible. Last game.
Yeah. It's not terrible. So he's not had a run of low scores. What we don't know is what kind of form Smith is in, really, because he didn't have much to do in the T20 World Cup and he's not played a Shield game. So is Smith the kind of player that needs to score runs pretty regularly to stay in form? We've never known that, really, because there's so much cricket around generally. So it's a bit up in the air, but, you know, you've got... If Labuschagne and Smith have half decent Ashes series, and by that I mean they average 40-45, I think it's difficult for England. But if one of them has a slightly off summer and they average 30-35, England have got half a chance.
It'd be interesting to see if he's been battling that elbow injury for a while now, like if that's completely behind him. Also, what England did in 2019, which I found amazing, was giving him so many easy singles off his hip and putting a deep square leg and bowling really well. And he'd defend three or four balls and then they'd get one a little bit too straight. He'd just defend it, see that it had squirted out on the onside and would take a single and get off strike. That New Zealand were a little bit better in that, in keeping those fielders in there tight. And if you set the field well to him like that, because normally when he bats time, the runs just accumulate. He's almost so good that he doesn't feel the need to take a risk and play a more extravagant shot. And he can sometimes get marooned when the field is well set and they don't give him any singles. That would be it'll be interesting to see how that pans out. But it's kind of a breakthrough. It's a significant season for Smith in the sense that if he dominates this season, then his position as arguably Australia's second greatest batter really firms up. If he didn't have the greatest season against India last summer, if he has another summer where he averages 38, then you know those questions will still remain a little bit unanswered.
I think him having the vice captaincy is a big thing. I think that adds some responsibility, and you know, is potentially a step back towards the Australian captaincy. Whether that happens or not, who knows? But I think that will make a difference in terms of him having a little bit of responsibility as well.
He scored a lot of runs when he had the C on his jersey or wherever they put it nowadays. So then you go Travis Head, Cameron Green, and I guess this is an area where England will feel they have a little chance. Travis Head, who's had an up and down test career so far, and then Cameron Green, huge potential, but when it comes to the Ashes, potential doesn't matter. You need to perform because if you, you know, in the top six, he needs to contribute. And
you could say that
I don't think of Harry Green. What?
You could say that about everything in life. When it comes to anything, potential doesn't matter. You've got to perform, not just the Ashes.
No, but I'm just saying, like, as opposed to a different series where they might give him a bit of time, they won't do that in the Ashes.
I've annoyed you, haven't I?
I feel like I've walked into a married tiff.
No. So, all right. What do you think?
I think he's going to do really well. And I think that it's going to be, I think maybe the big moment of the summer that Green will fulfill his potential, and that's going to be make it very difficult for England. But as you say, he's got potential. Let's see if he can perform.
Looked to me as one of those players who looks a fantastic player, but hasn't scored mountains of runs and hasn't taken loads of wickets. That's going to happen at some point because you just watch him and think he's too good not to take wickets and he's too good not to score runs. But it hasn't happened yet. And if things don't go well halfway through the Ashes series for him and for Australia, then there'll be questions.
He'll be out, I would think. Exactly. He'll get the hook. Do you think Travis Head will be in the test side in 2 years, Chippers?
2 years? No.
Yeah, Travis Head, 2 years from now.
No.
Made it.
No, I think so. Wow.
But what are the options in terms of, you know, this series? Khawaja at five?
I would have picked Khawaja at five.
Option, yeah.
I'd have picked Maddinson at five, and I'd have picked
Livingston.
I'd have picked. I would have picked Derek Jeter at five. No, I would have picked
Glenn Maxwell.
Glenn Maxwell at five
as the keeper.
And
yeah, I think this is going to be really interesting. See what Alex Carey does. I think the comparisons with Gilchrist are odious because they're very different players. But I think Carey is a pretty solid number seven when you add him into that lineup. He's an accomplished one-day player. But I think that Head, Green, Carey, if you're England, you're thinking that's wide open.
That comes back to my point earlier about Stokes at five. You know, you might get through the top order, but you've still got to get through Stokes. Whereas England, if they got Smith and Labuschagne out, or even one of those, you suddenly go, right, so Australia are 3 for 100 and Travis Head walks to the wicket and one of Smith and Labuschagne have gone, then you look at Head, Green, Carey. At this moment, unproven at test level, I think England will feel they could easily have Australia out for 200. Not easily, but they could have Australia out for 200. And I think it's the other way round with England. That if England are 2 for 100, then they've got a chance of getting that 450-500.
I think our number eight is interesting as well in terms of just pure batting. If Wokes does play and does bat at eight, that's a substantial advantage that England have. And for all the higher strength that Australia has towards the top of the order, that Cummins is renowned as being a very fine number eight. He's, I think, statistically the worst number eight Australia's ever had in terms of anyone who's had a decent career. He just doesn't score any runs. He looks good, but he doesn't score any runs. And Stark may well bat above him there, but Wokes could score a century.
Yeah, it's a strong tail for England. And you're right. It could be. And we'll get a few early
Robinson
wickets.
Robinson can bat as well. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah, and Tweed.
Yep.
So.
Don't think you'll be doing much of that anymore.
Good thing about live. All righty. And then the Australian attack, they've gone with the old stages. Lyon needs one more wicket for 400 test wickets. They've backed in Stark. And then obviously Hazelwood and Cummins are no-brainers. Well, I'll start with you, Chippers. You know, do you think we'll see Lyon and Stark play all five tests?
I'd be surprised if Lyon didn't play all five.
Okay, yep.
I mean, there was a bit of stick around for Lyon last summer against India. I actually thought he bowled pretty well. Didn't take many wickets, but I thought he bowled pretty well. He created opportunities. I remember the Sydney test here, and they weren't taken, or, you know, it just went out of reach or whatever. So I thought he actually bowled pretty well against India. So Lyon, all five, yeah, for me. I think Australia would be mad to leave him out for a test match, just because of what England think of Lyon as much as anything. Stark, I'm not so sure about, because the series is quite condensed and quite packed. And I think Australia, never mind the fact there's a query about how well he's bowling, I don't think Australia should pick those three fast bowlers for all five test matches, because I think you're giving yourself trouble at some point. So, that, you know, I would pick maybe Nisa for Adelaide, or Richardson maybe Jai for Richardson. Adelaide. Yeah. And they should be planning to do that. Now, they might go in with the three to start with, and it might not be a form reason that one of them comes out of the side. I mean, presumably Cummins is going to play all five test matches, given that he's the captain. So I would look to rotate, and maybe they play three or four each, main two, if you like.
I think their aim at this stage would now be to have the same three unchanged for the first two tests, but then potentially at the Boxing Day test, rotate Stark out and bring Richardson in. Now, that obviously changes significantly if Stark's taken a bag full of wickets, but I agree that they'll want to do it prophylactically rather than retrospectively.
Prophylactically?
Yes.
I didn't come on here to have words. I mean, it's my language.
What the fuck is going on?
I've never heard of that. I've never heard of that word.
Preventatively.
okay. Yeah, I'm okay with that. Why didn't you say preventatively then?
Because I wanted to get this reaction from you two clouds.
Yeah. What? Yeah. I'm trying to think of a joke to follow it up, but I can't get one out. All right. Ooh, so
I've ever told a joke about the word prophylactically.
Yeah. Oh, well, look, it's a good time now to get onto our predictions. So we're going to end this preview with predictions on the line. So most runs for each side, most wickets for each side, the Gabba test result, and then the series result. The series result, obviously, it's a bit difficult because we don't know where the fifth test is, but have a stab at it. Assume it's going to be day night somewhere. So, Chippers, I'll start with you. Most runs.
Test.
What?
It's definitely going to be in Australia, that fifth test, isn't it?
Yeah, and definitely under lights by the
not
sounds
Edgbaston
of it.
Not Edgbaston or something. No, okay.
No. All right, so Chippers, most runs for the Australians in the series.
Smith.
Yeah.
I mean, it's boring.
Most runs for England.
This is boring. Root.
Yeah.
With Milan second.
Okay, I like that. The most wickets for the Aussies.
Still with me?
Yep.
Cummins, just because he's going to play all five tests.
I like that. Most wickets for the English tourists.
Robinson. Ooh. He could play all five tests.
That is out of left field. Then
Anderson and Broad are not going to play all five tests. I don't think Leach will get that number of wickets. Wood's not going to play all five tests, and I don't think Wokes will either. Robinson
tactical
could.
Pick.
Yeah.
Yep.
Fantasy.
All right. Gabba result.
Draw.
Yep. Yeah. Okay. Series result.
I think it's really difficult. I looked at the BBC predictions today.
What?
And I looked at it and I thought, yeah. I mean, McGrath went with 5-0, obviously. And that was the only one I kind of dismissed. There were lots of 2-1s, 2-2s. I'm going 2-1 Australia.
Okay. Beauty.
But 2-2 wouldn't surprise
2-1.
Me.
Yep. All right, Mr. Dennett, most runs, Liam Livingstone, most wickets, Glenn Maxwell. right, most runs could for you, Australia.
Could you pick the Warner. Players prophylactically?
Yeah.
Warner.
Okay, I like that. For England?
Route by a mile.
Okay. By a mile. Look at that.
Both not saying that the others are going to do badly. I'm predicting Root to score most runs on either side.
Okay, good. That wasn't the question, but good answer. Most wickets for Australia in the series?
Hazelwood.
And the English tourists?
Robinson. Same. I don't think that was out of left field at all from Chippers. That's who I think.
Wow. You two, like twins. Match result at the Gabba?
England.
England. Ooh. Wow. Like
that has surprised
like
me.
That. And then series result?
4-1 Australia.
Oh.
4-1 Australia. Can we, so can England we wins the off? First one. Oh, that's a great one. I love that one. All righty, my turn. My turn. So most runs for Australia. I'm going Steve Smith, but I really think he hasn't batted enough this year. So my thinking is he's just going to want to spend the whole time out in the middle. And when he's like that, we saw in the 2017-18 Ashes at the Gabba, he batted for like 3 days for 100. So I think you can just say prophylactically that Root will that Smith will be out in the middle. Then most runs for England, Ben Stokes. I think Australia is going to rattle through their top order consistently throughout the series, and there'll be a lot of rescue jobs by Ben Stokes. So I'm picking Stokes and Smith. Most wickets for Australia, I'm going Josh Hazlewood again. I think he'll be exceptional. And then for England, I was going to go Jimmy Anderson until the injury today, but I'm going to stick with Anderson. I think two day-night test matches, he could take 10 wickets in each of them, and that'll be enough for Anderson to be most wickets. Gabba result, England win. Series result, I'm going 2-2. I just don't think there's much between these sides, and I think we've given them a test.
You're predicting a Gabba end. Win, both of you. What's happened to Fortress Gabba?
Yeah, I think that's dead. I think it's seaming around. It's wet up there.
When did England last win at the Gabba?
86-7.
Yeah.
Did they? Right, okay. Yeah. I thought it was longer ago than that.
Yeah.
That's the answer to almost any question that there's a positive answer for England. It's either 86-7 or 2010-11.
Yeah. I didn't think you'd know better than me, but I don't remember them winning at the Gabba. I don't remember them going 1-0 up, but. You may
all I remember from 86-7 is Chris Broad batting for about 6 months.
Mm. And Alistair Cook.
He scored three centuries.
Yeah.
Three in a row, wasn't it? Series. Three tests in a row.
And I remember hearing an interview
with Michael.
Smash
it down the stumps in Perth.
Yes, I remember that. But I remember hearing an interview with Michael Parkinson, who was out here. And Michael Parkinson said, Australia will be good again soon, don't you worry. And I remember, because at that stage, I was too young to remember 82-3. So all I'd known was Australia losing. And I remember thinking, oh, I doubt it. I think that, you know, I just assumed that that's what happened. England won. And then he was right because Australia then won the next 8 series in a row.
Good times. All righty. Well, that's it for our Cricket Daily Ashes preview. Thanks, everybody that's watched and listened on the podcast app. We'll be here after every day of the test, at least Paul and I. And then we'll try and get Chippers on. We'll try and, you know, especially get a few guests on. But can't wait for it to start tomorrow morning. Chippers, any final words for the English listeners who, you know, are home in England? It's cold. It's miserable. Their football team probably got smashed on the weekend. Yeah. Any words of wisdom?
That I think it will be. What I would say is this is in the last year. Now is as optimistic as I've felt in that. I think this is because of things that have happened. I've got used to Stokes and Archer being out, and we've got one of them back. The whole Tim Payne shenanigans, it doesn't seem right. You know, the whole thing doesn't feel right to me. And I would imagine that has some consequences within the dressing room, potentially. Cummins, is he a good captain? He may well be a brilliant captain. Who knows? But we don't know. And Smith has not batted for a long time. So I think England come to the Ashes, for me, at the high point of optimism in the last year. That doesn't mean to say I think they'll win them, but I think they'll be much more competitive than at any point I've thought over the last 6, 9, 12
months.
That's
some positivity for the English watchers. Paul, any final words?
before the election that Donald Trump ended up winning, America's prime tipster said he could see four equally likely results. I can see three equally likely results. He said that they were a Clinton landslide, a Clinton solid win, a Clinton narrow win, or a Trump narrow win. Now, obviously, I'm excluding draws. It could be a drawn series, but just to make it simple, I can see three possible results, all roughly equal. An Australian landslide, an Australian narrow win, or an England narrow win. I do give England a chance. Obviously, if it's going to be 5-0, then I think that's going to be Australia, not England. But it wouldn't surprise me if England did a lot better than people thought. Also, just a quick comment we've got a few comments here. One from Anthony Brown. Long-time listener, gents. First time watching on YouTube. Good to see you're being professional by not drinking anything, which is a reference to our previous show. And Ray PMB9 has sent a fair few stats through. He sent one through to me saying that Liam Livingstone averages 36.6 with the ball in the last 3 years in the county championship. And my point is, that's not too bad. I mean, I'm not having him in there to take to win the series, but I'm having him in there being as good as a part-time option, and mainly given that I don't think Leach is going to do necessarily so well. Menace has disappeared. What's going on there?
Yeah. Who said there's no good news? I'm not sure. I'd be interested to know how much Livingstone has bowled in the county championship in the last...
Probably not much.
Yeah.
And he's been playing 100 and stuff and slugging it everywhere and probably not much. But So we've got a fair few comments during the show. Thanks to everyone for sending them through. It would be good if Menas returned, but that might be it for him. Chippers, it's been great having you on. And
I've stayed till the end. I mean, yeah. I've the delivery man, the postman hasn't come, and I've got to go and pick up a Christmas parcel. I've stayed right to the end, but Menas has gone.
I just can't believe it's come up so quickly. I've not even properly organized my calendar. Like, we're doing something Friday at about 5:30. And I forgot to say no because it's come up so quickly. Yeah, I'm going to have to find a way to get out of that and become my usual antisocial self when the Ashes is on. So can't wait. I heard the BT preview, actually. I heard it on SEN today. They had the way that BT is going to start covering the Ashes is so good. It's full of hyperbole, and it's exactly the build-up that the Ashes needs, the sort of crazy hyperbole. And talking about 140 odd years of history and everything else. It's a really, really well done. Oh, he's back. The great man.
Oh, disappointing. Yeah.
So another thing we can send to Jaleesa Apps in terms of internet issues.
Left on purpose.
Why did you leave on purpose?
I know. My wife just kept calling me and I thought it might be an emergency, but
okay.
It wasn't. All righty. Well, thanks everyone for watching. Did I miss
anything?
That
was a great point you made there, Dennis. Brilliant. Yeah. The best point of the whole hour.
The last minute is reverberating around the podcast world, Menas. Chippers and I have we've nailed it. The best 90 seconds of podcasting in history.
We've probably libeled about 17 people, and Menas says you're the man that's responsible for the podcast. It's you. It's down to you.
I'll handle the legal fees. Thanks, everyone.
Cheers, guys.
See you, guys.
On Florida's Space Coast, we think you can have the best of both worlds. Kind of like right now. Driving at your desk, maybe at the gym, but you're also grooving to some music. Visit us and you'll go to the beach and see a rocket launch or go kayaking and manatee spotting. It's all waiting for you on the only beach that doubles as a launch pad. Plan your adventure today at visitspacecoast.com.
Sports Social Podcast Network.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.